We become a race of peeping Toms.
Something happened. Something was happening. I had no idea.
Where is her treacherous husband now? But in a place where she can visit, if she wished, mine. It's with the ancestors.
Yeah, I'm drinking, Luann.
How can you hold cake and not eat it?
No shit, you guys got coke here.
Oh my God, of course.
I mean, I know to you I'm just your old fat Aunt Mattie Faye. I'm more than that, sweetheart.
These are godless times, Mrs. Snell.
You're all feckin' boring with your piddling grievances over nothing. You're all feckin' boring.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Best Supporting Podcast, a podcast dedicated to celebrating and dissecting the performances of our favorite Best Supporting Actresses. My name is Nick Kachanov, and I'm going to ram you with my rammer.
And my name is Colin Drucker, and I'm going to make something for my mommy.
Oh, that's nice. It's very sweet.
Yeah. Like, yeah, two different ends of the movie here, really. Like,
I was just going to say, we get a little bit of both.
You get everything. You get cute little kids. You get Patrick Wilson's butt. You get...
Oh, my God.
Ladies upon ladies upon ladies. And all of it wrapped up in this early 2000s thing that I'm really fixated on. Because this week, we're talking about 2006's Little Children.
What a great choice. I feel at one point I owned this movie, because again, it was like one of those, like, very much like I Am Sam. It was like, this is an Oscar-y movie and I have to own it and like brag about it, even though I probably didn't understand anything that was going on or, you know, the nuances of it. But now it's a whole different world, and I was really quite just... what's the word I'm looking for here? Uncomfortable, really, the entire time, which I guess is the point. This is a Todd Field movie who gave us, you know, of course, Lydia Tarr and In the Bedroom. So a really wonderful canon of movies that we already love. So this was really fun.
Yeah, I was thinking, I feel like there is a sort of developing category in my mind of like movies that Nick bought on DVD in the early 2000s.
Yeah, I know.
You know?
And this is our second movie in a row where there's a daughter named Lucy. So we're really... And I have a daughter named Lucy,
oh,
so it's just crazy.
I didn't even put that together. It's just like a month of Lucy's, you know?
Yeah.
That didn't even click for me. And just before we started recording, we were talking about Lucy. I just, you know...
I know.
My opening quote was from Lucy. Oh, man.
Oh, my gosh.
Jesus Christ.
It's all lining
up. It is. Not only is this directed by a familiar name, you know, we've done In the Bedroom before, and we've both seen Tar, but I think it's co-written and based on a book by Tom Parada, who is the writer behind The Leftovers.
Yes. And I need to see what else he's done. I really, especially with all of the narration in this movie, it was just really great writing. And I was like, that Tom, he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, his name is familiar to me as like a, you know, literary fiction author. And this comes from my own early 2000s, like, books I bought at Barnes & Noble in the early 2000s.
Of
you
course,
know what I mean?
Yes.
And just kind of like when I wasn't, because it was like at that point in my life, I very much still identified as a writer as well. And so, you know, you got to read to be a writer. And I remember Tom Parada
right.
being one of those names of like, oh, yeah, he writes. He's kind of like the John Cheever of his time or something. Who's the guy who wrote Rabbit Run? John Updike. He's the John Updike of his time.
I see.
And, you know, writing about the plight of the suburban man. But like then I just didn't keep up with it. And I was like, well, you know, listen, I'm never going to get to that book. But thank God they made a movie version of it and really brought the book feeling and brought the feeling of reading one of those really well-written literary fiction novels from the early 2000s with the fabulous narration.
Yeah, at first I was like, do we need this? Is it necessary? That was like one of my first questions for you. But in looking, I don't know if it was in the trivia, but it was definitely one of the first like five reviews. Sometimes I'll scan them on IMDb, even though they're just probably like, you know, Joe Beercan, talking about how, or at least their interpretation was that this sort of read as like a children's story, or that's what they were maybe trying to achieve with that. And I kind of liked that. But is that what you picked up on as well? What did you think of it?
I like that idea. The way, like the writing of the narration and kind of knowing it was based on a book, it just took me to really that feeling of like, of reading books like that. There's an author that I really love named Lori Moore, and she's kind of from the same era, similar-ish genre, but like more so writing about like about women, thank God. Sure. But yeah, like just a lot of, she has a collection of short stories and a couple of books, but it's just that feeling of like getting swept up into a story about the mundane lives of people because the writing is so good and the writing is so sharp and like the way that they're describing the scenes. I mean, I think like the version of this on crack is The Hours, you know?
Yes. I mean, I would kill for some not commentary, but like that sort of treatment with The Hours. It's almost like watching every once in a while for the Oscar categories, if they have the time for the screenwriting, they'll show the screenplay.
Yep.
And they'll sort of read it out loud. And I was like, I would love to watch a movie like that. Honestly, like commentary is also great, but give me like someone reading the script too, because screenplays are fascinating and it'd be cool to see that.
Right. Like how certain things like existed in the screenplay versus what the final product was. Yeah, absolutely. And I think this movie is a great example of that. Like there's like, you know, for example, it's like, is it, how much in the script is it? When Kathy realizes the sexual tension between Sarah and Brad, like what's on the page versus what Jennifer Connelly does, you know?
I thought that was like one of the moments where it was most effective, because it kind of drops off a little bit. Like it's really heavy at the beginning, the narration, and then it kind of picks up just like at choice little spots. But that really heightened that scene a lot.
Yeah, that combination. I felt like, oh, I love this. I don't feel like I'm being told what to feel. I just feel like it's almost the way that music works in a scene, you know?
Yes. Ooh, I love that comparison, honestly, because I feel like when people say like the prose is so rich, you know what I mean? But it really does. It's like, so the prose is rich.
Yeah.
Like I can't say anything else beside that. I just really agree that it's just like worked.
It made me
perfectly beside it.
Yeah, it made me want to like be reading a book. It made me want to be like, you know, put my phone down, stop scrolling TikTok.
Yes.
And pick up one of, you know, a book that has rich prose and let that like send me off to sleep at night. That's the person I want to be in 2024.
Yes. Oh, yes. I mean, romanticizing reading books is like a sickness of mine, because I have so many books, beautiful books that I've bought, whether they're just like on my Kindle or just shit I picked up at a yard sale. Not shit.
Yeah, but yeah.
And then sometimes I'll go all out and buy something in hardback because it's like you're buying that feeling of this is going to be the book that changes me. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be on Book Talk now. I re-download the Goodreads app and then, you know, I'm taking a nap on a couch.
Yeah.
With books.
I'm watching Cindy Mindy make peppers and sausage. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Oh, my God. Cindy Mindy has taken over my world. Oh, no. I mean, more of that on the after show at patreon.com/BSAPod. I'm just obsessed with her.
Yeah. I mean,
anyway.
I just have to ask, did you watch her making stuffing?
Oh, you know what? I liked it and I didn't finish watching it. I think it was one of those moments where like I was leaving, but I liked it for later because I was showing Keon my liked videos last night and that came up.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember, I haven't watched it all. Yeah.
And you know, we can save it for the after show, but it's so important that the most important ingredient is the Bell's seasoning. And I was like, oh, Cindy, you're a real one. You're absolutely a real one if you're using Bell's. I know that much.
I just want to write her a letter. Because I just want to go visit her. I want to live in her neighborhood.
Yeah.
She's so real.
She's so real. Ugh. I know. Best Supporting Cindy Mindy.
Speaking of real.
Yeah. Speaking of real. So we are indeed, we are here to talk about Little Children this week, which I don't think I've seen since, this is another one of those movies that I haven't seen since the early 2000s.
Same.
Yeah. And like, put it on the cat on the shelf and in the catalog of like, okay, there's that important movie I saw. And I used to, and I'm still sort of interested in it, but I used to be so obsessed with like these kind of like suburban dramas.
Yes, like Revolutionary Road is another one, another Kate Winslet movie too. But yes, it's a great genre for gays.
Yeah, I love a suburban drama. I love. There's a movie from like the 50s called No Down Payment, which is like five or six couples in a new kind of development neighborhood and the interweaving dramas between them. And I remember loving it, but it was the same thing where I was like, I just love the dramas that happen at dinner parties and at cookouts and at the block party and, you know, and what's happening at this event and the gossip in the supermarket. I just love the suburbs as like, it's kind of like all of the stuff going on underneath the surface, you know?
Oh, yeah. And this is just like a prime example of it. And I mean, just like the, I almost want to call them like a Greek chorus, those three women at the beginning and how much I just hated them all too. And it all starts that way typically. Like the best version of this is like it kind of revolves around a woman who's on the outside of it all. Very like Stepford Wives in a way too, that like kind of is immersed but doesn't quite want to go that route and goes a different way than, you know, than the like the stream or the flow of the neighborhood vibes.
Well, and the movie literally opens with Best Supporting Podcast alum Meg March herself, Trini Alvarado, as one of the neighborhood moms, Teresa. And literally, she has the opening line, opening scene, the camera's on her for an extended shot. And I was just like, yes! Come on, Meg. Come on, Megan March.
I loved it. And I love that she has that little moment later. It's just like there's so much that's not said there that she probably wants out too, but doesn't know how to get out of like Marianne's clutches, you know, like the queen of the moms, who is my most hated person in this movie.
Oh, I mean, you know, we have a couple of people on this podcast who we like the Hall of Fame of people we hate. Aubrey from Away From Her.
Ugh,
who was the one we talked about after him where we were like, oh, this goes on the shelf with Aubrey? Who was it that we hated?
Why do I feel like it was a little kid?
I think you're right.
It was a little girl from something.
Yeah.
Just hated
her. Driving,
or him. Can't remember.
No, I think you're right. It was a little girl that we hated. It's not Amy Sakasitz. And I meant to look it up. But anyway, it doesn't really... We'll eventually do our, like, the worst of... worst supporting podcast, you know. But
yes,
I would say Aubrey from Away From Her, Marianne from Little Children, and what's his name, Larry from this movie.
Oh God, Larry stressed me the fuck out. Larry Hedges. Larry Hedges. Although I do think that performance is really good.
Yes.
Like I've seen that guy, Noah Emmerich or Emmerich. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right. He's just one of those guys that you've seen everywhere. And I think that he was a kind of like a featured player here in this story.
Yeah. I mean, he had a really great role in this. I mean, the movie kind of ends on his subplot even, which I thought was interesting.
Yes.
I'm looking at his IMDb because, I feel like I've seen him before. I don't know from what, but he's just one of those actors who kind of, we're like, oh, yeah, that guy. I remember seeing him in something on TBS, you know? He was in Little Children. Oh, yeah, I saw him in that. But in any event, so Little Children, which, I mean... there's a lot of people in this movie that I'm excited to talk about. I did not remember how rich this cast was with like great little roles. Like I mostly remembered Kate and Patrick Wilson and to some extent Jennifer Connelly. And obviously we'll talk about Oscar nominated Jackie Earl Haley. And then I would always think about Phyllis Somerville in this. She's like indelible to me in this movie. But I kind of forgot about everybody else.
Yeah, I mean, I really, really loved Jean, played by Helen Carey.
Oh,
I just want to make crafts with her.
I'm so happy.
What a great scene. What does Jean know? What did Lucy tell her?
Best supporting Jean. I'm so happy we're talking about Jean already because Jean pinged for me. Jean at the Westins. I don't know what to tell you. This movie might really dominate at the Westins because, like, we're going to talk about everybody, but, like, I'm so happy you mentioned Jean, who's, you know, Sarah's little like evening walking partner, and then invites her to her book club. I was like, this is the role I want, is Jean.
Oh yeah, that's right. She did take her to book club. Oh, by the way, the other girl that I hated was Nancy Wheeler in Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. The mean
that's
girl.
That's it. That's yes. it. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
I had to look it up and I was like, yep, that's her.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to Jean.
Oh, Jean.
I just, that scene where she leaves, and I'm assuming that Lucy probably just said something to the effect of like, my mommy likes to hang out with Brad a lot and they like to wrestle downstairs.
Right.
Or something like that.
Right. Or
and mm-hmm. Jean knows. Yeah.
I agree. We never really find out what it is, but I love that Jean gets to have that moment. And I think the next scene we see Kathy telling Brad that like their son, you know, what's his name? Son.
Yeah, Aaron,
there he
Aaron.
Is. Yeah, had yeah. was talking about his new friend Lucy. And so it's like, oh,
yep.
Lucy's been talking about Aaron, and like, yeah. And then it's like, it's almost the way that Kathy realizes at that, you know, dinner party, or, you know, the dinner that Sarah and Brad, there's an energy between them. It's almost as if we didn't see Jean making a similar connection of like, huh, this just doesn't feel right, you know?
Yeah, because you wonder, one thing that I'm kind of glad that it didn't exist, but the whole, like, the trio of moms, Marianne, Teresa, and then the third one.
Cheryl.
Of,
yeah.
Like, just Cheryl, just, like, spreading shit around the neighborhood after the kiss and you know, in the playground, and, like, did it eventually just get back to Jean, but Jean didn't believe it. But maybe she asked Lucy a couple questions and that kind of confirmed it for her. Or who knows? Who knows who got the gene?
That's interesting. Well, if you think about it, because someone else in the book club invited Marianne as a little sister. And so Marianne saw the kiss. Right. And so what did Marianne tell her big sister? And you're right. I mean, we don't see it, but it's very likely that like that planted some seeds. And we kind of obviously see in this neighborhood, you know, people will run with a suspicion or will run with a, you know, an idea, and cling on to it, you know?
Yeah.
So, and cause obviously, and for anyone who doesn't know, you know, this like, how old is this movie? 18 years old. Can this movie drive?
Something like that.
Little Children is this little suburban drama about, this young, these two, you know, two parents, Sarah and Brad, from two different couples, played by Kate Winslet and Patrick Wilson, who meet at the playground and, you know, are both in varying levels of discontented relationships and thus eventually develop a friendship that turns into an affair. And meanwhile, there is a child predator named Ronnie, who I guess his home is out of jail and is back with his mother, May, played by Phyllis Somerville, which has got the whole neighborhood on edge, you know, as they're all going into the summer. And
yes,
kind of how all of that intertwines and overlaps. And meanwhile, Brad is pretending to study for the bar, but he's really just like watching kids skateboard. And then eventually he's playing like night football with the cops and is clearly going through his own, like, I mean, how old is he supposed to be? In his 30s at this point? Like, is he younger than we are now in this movie?
I know, right? Let's figure. 1973 is how old.
Okay, so he was 28. Yeah. So, no, yes, he was. He was like
33. Patrick Wilson was 33. Wow.
So this guy's going through like his mid-30s, you know, crisis of, it's like he's graduated from high school, college is over, he's married, he has a kid, he's settled into the suburbs, like the wild oats, there's not many wild oats to sow anymore for Brad, I think is the story here.
And he's fucking hot. Like, I mean, I can't explain my obsession with him, like, during this era. And I do think this movie has some of the best sex scenes I've ever seen in my life, because both of them are so hot. Like, it would be a threesome I would gladly join.
Boy,
like,
there you go.
Oh my God. It's like that red swimsuit. There's something about Kate. I don't know. And they're both like tan and gorgeous, but Patrick Wilson is just, I always think of that line from Angels in America when it's not Lewis, it's the other guy. He's like, oh, he's the Marlboro Man. And he says it with such like, I can't compete with that.
Right.
You know, and he is. He's just so like quintessential American stud.
Yeah. Yeah. When I was thinking about how like, because this movie is very much like such a specific like hot era of Patrick Wilson. And not that he's not anymore. Mm-hmm. But I just love that,
yeah.
You know, as we are of, you know, as it is, you know, 20 years later, that now actors like Patrick Wilson and Thomas Jane and, you know, Justin Theroux to bring The Leftovers. I love that they're becoming our like our new De Niro's and Pacino's soon. You know what I mean?
Yes. Like, oh my gosh, that's crazy to think
and
about.
And now like the young coming uppers are like, The Timotees and the,
oh Lord, the Jacob Elordis,
the Elordis, yeah. And then the Barry Kays, whose last name I won't be pronouncing,
yeah.
and Ryan Gosling, like it's mm-hmm. just it's. I think that's what I'm finding really interesting about these early 2000s movies is like enough time has passed where like who those actors were then, they are not anymore. You know.
Yeah.
And so he's still working. He's still doing all those Conjuring movies and whatnot. But like,
yeah.
Yeah. To me, Patrick Wilson will always look like how he looked like in Little Children. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He is just, and like the voice of an angel.
Mm.
It's like, I think I saw on TikTok the other day that someone didn't know that he was a Broadway guy. He was in the Full Monty among 80 other shows. But again, almost like a James Marsden type where like, always delivers, is really good, but like I always think that he's overlooked for awards consideration because he's just so hot.
Yeah. It's like, yeah,
you have your looks, you don't need any trophies. Like, never won a Tony, you know, hasn't been really nominated for too much, but he's always working and always doing great.
Yeah, he's just like a working actor, you know. He's, I mean, I'm looking at his
yes.
nominations. Oh, no, that was a Saturn Award. Well, you know, I can't sneeze at a Saturn Award.
Yeah.
Well, he did get a Primetime Emmy nomination for Angels in America. So at least, you know, that's
good. Oh, good. That's
yeah.
good. That's,
and a Gold Globe nomination.
I mean,
so that's good.
Oh, nice, nice,
yeah.
nice. He is great in it.
Yeah.
One day we're going to have to do that. It's going to be like a whole, I mean, it feels like such a big undertaking. And I think we've talked about it before. Like, maybe it's a Patreon thing like we did with Smash. Or I don't know.
Right.
I don't know. But I feel like we need to, because the women in that are great.
Oh.
And the guys.
Yeah. No, I would totally. I loved Angels in America. I would do that again. That's one of those yeah. things where even though it's like it's long, it's like, let's go on this journey. Let's, you know, I mean, just Meryl as Ethel Rosenberg fighting with Al Pacino is
Al Pacino.
some of the finest period. Yeah.
Oh, he goes, Ethel. He's like drooling on the floor. It's almost camp.
I know.
But it's also like incredible acting.
I honestly love him in that. I think he is so good.
Yeah.
I like it's yeah. a great example of like, because I mean, he's like a closeted gay man, but it's like, this is such a perfect person to play this like
yeah,
bulldog.
It works.
Yeah. So
yeah.
Well, you know, speaking of people that we've seen before, you know, we have talked about Kate Winslet. I can't believe I did the Jack Black.
Kate Winslet.
The Jack Black?
The Jack Black. Yes. Oh, I appreciate that.
I hate
that.
Myself. But we but we have talked about her quite a bit before. And you know what I love about Kate Winslet is how many times she is cast as the dowdy one. Like,
I know.
And they do a good job of it. I'll say this, with the eyebrows and the hair and the overalls, like they do a pretty good job of like, okay, I can kind of see who she's playing. But like Kate Winslet, between this, obviously Mare, they really had to kind of rough her up. And The Holiday, I think she's even supposed to kind of be like the Bridget Jones, pick over.
Mm-hmm.
This woman is so fucking stunning. It's just.
I know. It just doesn't work. I also read in the IMDb that Rachel McAdams was like considered for this part. If they would have cast her and Patrick Wilson together, I think I would have like spontaneously combusted.
Oh.
It would have been too hot to handle.
Oh, I can't even. Why do
oh
I feel like
God.
How have they not done something before? Oh,
Yeah, but you're right. It's like Kate, you know what it makes me think of? And this is like such a deep cut for Not Without My Sister. But do you remember when they talked about Kate Winslet and Mare of Easttown? And they're like, how did they make Kate Winslet look so dowdy? And they drew her eyebrows a little bit lower.
Yes.
And then like Beatrice or Rosemary was like, and ever since I heard that, she's been doing the opposite. Her eyebrows are like in the heavens now. Because her eyebrows are desperate.
But desperate.
Yeah.
But I remember them saying that that's how they did it, is like lowering the eyebrows. And
yes.
But it's just so funny, the idea that she's, you know, the frumpy, messy one, you know. It's like, oh, man, this is like she's all that. Just like take off the glasses and she's beautiful. Like,
yeah.
So, and, you know, and sometimes there have been times where, because obviously, like, Kate Winslet is British, and so she, you know, doesn't always have an American accent. And sometimes I don't always, like, love Kate Winslet's American accent. I loved it in Mare because she was doing something really specific. But this grew on me. I got who she was playing, but at the same time, I wonder if there's another actress who might feel a little more, like, for some reason, this isn't the perfect casting, but for some reason, I'm thinking of like a Martha Plimpton.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's more of like a realness that I think Kate Winslet still looks like a movie star, and she's supposed to be playing kind of like the, like, you know, the not the ugly duckling, but kind of the, like, I don't know, not as
the
pretty.
Regular mom, yeah. Like the tired mom. Yeah. Yes. I know what you're saying. And I could see Martha Plimpton looking really great too, like really kind of, like you said, it's like she can go full mass, you know,
right.
And just kind of wear that pink like winter coat or something with the shoes, and then have a banging body by the pool and having her hair slicked back. I think that's kind of inspired. That's great.
Yeah.
And it makes it all like, it makes it more hot.
Yeah. Right. And I think that's because it's like, of course, Kathy, played by Jennifer Connelly, is supposed to be, as Brad says, a knockout, and she is, but I was like, well, I mean, you're all very pretty.
Yeah,
you know,
it's a movie after all. Yes, yeah. I totally agree. And I do love that, like, once Kate was cast, at least said in the IMDb, that she suggested Patrick Wilson. She knew exactly what she was doing. Maybe that Patrick, because, like, I mean, those sex scenes are just next level. Like,
yeah.
Their bodies.
That first one.
Have never looked better.
On the sink, in the basement.
With the pipes.
With the pipes. Oh, my God. It was just, that butt.
It's a gift.
That butt. Oh, my God. I had to go lay down in the lawn, you know? I had to go outside and just touch grass, you know?
Yes. I for some reason in my memory, I thought they were on top of the washing machine that was like fully functioning.
Right.
And it was just like this like crazy sex. But like they were just like to the right of it. And then again in the attic too, it was just steamy. It's
very much so. Well, and I like that Sarah, you know, she is, like, she really pursues him, and she, I think, very overtly, I think, with, like, you know, having him put the sunscreen on her back, even the first thing of, like, hey, let's freak him out. Give me a hug. You know what would really freak them out? Like, she doesn't, like, oops, fall into this, like, relationship that she, or this, you know, affair that she got seduced into. Like, she pursues this in a way that feels, and maybe I think this is a point of the movie, like, she comes across as a lot younger and like brazen than she really is. Like, I think there's a lot about how Sarah and Brad are kind of like trying to reclaim some wild youth. And I think he's doing it in this very masculine way. And she's doing it with this kind of like sexual liberation from her god-awful husband, Richard.
Yeah. She's writing Sarah loves Brad in her notebook in third period, you
yeah.
know, like it's really kind of that almost like an adolescent kind of pursuit. And that first scene I think is so tricky because they go from meeting for the first time ever to hugging to like kissing. It really is shocking in a way. And then of course, like the women getting up and leaving it's almost funny, like how just appalled they are by it. And then everyone just sort of like scatters. It almost feels like, you know, Brad kissed Sarah on the playground.
Right.
You know, it felt very much like little kids.
Yeah. Yeah. Like it really, because, you know, obviously the name in the movie, it makes it, you know, when you find out there's like a, you know, child predator in it, like you kind of make that connection. But like, in what mm-hmm. way are they all acting like little children and or trying yeah. to, you know, act like little children? Even the way that obviously for different reasons, but that Ronnie is the weirdo outcast who's close with his mom, you know, and and I feel like Kathy, well, and Jennifer Connelly is great casting for this because she was in these like she was in a bunch of 80 movies in the 80s. She was in Labyrinth. She was in this movie called 7 Minutes in Heaven. I remember watching on HBO mm-hmm. as a kid, but like I've seen her play like the high school girl. And so it's kind of cool to see her being like what feels like the captain of the football's hot girlfriend.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think, and maybe that's our segue to talk about her a little bit, because we've mentioned before on the pod too that her Oscar win is something that is just, it's a weird win. And I feel like maybe they were like the world, or at least Hollywood, was setting her up to be the next big thing. And we went on a deep dive last week, I think, and just kind of, you know, she's been working, she's been doing stuff, but it's such an interesting win. And even in this, like, I liked the dining room table scene. I liked the editing scene where she was watching that kid. Mm-hmm. But she doesn't really get the moment or a moment, at least that I found in this movie. I don't know what you thought.
I do think the role of Kathy is unfortunately a bit slight, you know, and it's kind of the role that I'm always the most intrigued by in these, you know. I think of Ann Archer in Fatal Attraction, you know what I mean? Like, that's my favorite character.
It's
her and her experience. And we do get like a tiny bit of that with a dinner table scene. And like that little face journey, that little moment she has is pretty great. And like, there is a real like, ooh, like you really like, it's a lot of quality and a small amount of quantity in that moment. But otherwise, yeah, I wanted her to have more of a role. It's interesting how we get slightly more of her in this, but like we get even less of Richard in this. He completely disappears from the movie. And so like, there's a way in which the spouses are, I would imagine, intentionally sidelined here. But I think that the tension of Kathy and her suspicions is kind of necessary, especially for that last act of the movie. Like, I kind of think her role should have grown as the movie went on.
Yeah. I wanted her to throw a plate or something, mm-hmm. you know, but instead it was just replaced by her mom coming to visit. And I was like, all right, I can't believe Brad just kind of walks out while they're like doing the dishes after dinner.
Yeah.
I was like, whoa, they're in the house?
Right.
That's crazy. That's like cold blooded.
I mean, because it gets to the point by the end where it's like, and I think, you know, even in that dinner scene when Brad is talking about that he plays football with Larry and he's on the parents, you know, concerned parents committee with Larry and Sarah has that line of like, you didn't tell me that you were on the same team mm-hmm. with him. And like moments like that, or Brad leaving while his wife and his mother-in-law are just in the other room, it's like, you guys really do actually want to get caught, because that would make this all so much easier if you could just get caught.
Yeah, it's like I would have came up with a game. I would have, if I was Sarah, I would have really kind of sucked up to Kathy and be like, oh my gosh, your husband is so great. The kids have been getting along so well. We should exchange numbers. You know, we should go out for lunch. Like, it's diabolical, but that's what my approach would have been.
Yeah, well, and the fact that Sarah doesn't do that, like she really like gets so blinded by this that like she's not tactical about it at all. Like it's really, I appreciated that Sarah was a little more flawed than I was expecting, but I think in a way that a character like this doesn't always get to be, you know, especially a woman. I don't feel like a female character gets to be this kind of flawed, but also redeemed by the end in some way.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting to watch the journey for sure. I had a thought, but I mean, switching gears a little bit, but should we talk about Jane? We need to talk about Jane.
Okay.
Miss Adams.
Miss Adams. Okay, so, okay. Oh my God. Oh my God.
It's so good.
Oh my God.
The like the template, I think, for maybe featured ensemble, yeah. I feel.
It's the way that Darcy Carden in the movie Other People would like,
yeah,
was like, oh,
Hall of Famer.
Hall of Famer. Jane Addams in Little Children. Oh my fucking God.
It's crazy.
She's incredible. This woman, we just need to have so much more Jane Addams on this podcast because she is so brilliant. So she, Ronnie's mother, and we're going to talk about, I mean, because we need to talk about Ronnie.
Yeah, we need to talk about May.
Yeah, and May.
Oh, and Ronnie.
Yeah, we got to talk about the McGorvies. But Ronnie's mother, May, wants him to get out there and start dating and, you know, meet someone his age and maybe that'll help him with the urges. Like, it's all so uncomfortable. And she, you know, he eventually meets this woman, you know, Sheila, through a personals ad. And Jane Addams is just, she's played this role before. We're never going to do the movie Happiness, but if we ever did the movie Happiness, it's she's on a very similar date with John Lovitz at the beginning of that movie. This is like Jane Addams, like bread and butter. She's so good at this. And
love it.
In this, it's like what I loved about it was, I don't know about you, but I kind of went in thinking, oh, I know, he's going to just like totally put her off and ask weird questions. But instead, they make kind of these two misfits make a connection at the steakhouse. But like talking about like, oh, so you had a breakdown. Oh, so what happened? You know, it's pretty young to have a breakdown. Like, and I think instead of her being upset by that, it's like she's relieved and that somebody's actually showing interest in her.
Yeah, because it feels like that's who she is, because both of them have these, I mean, I guess we should say just like secrets about themselves. And instead of like waiting, you know, 4 months, 4 years in the relationship for those to be discovered, he kind of just like lays it on the line or asks her, like you were saying, too. And I think there would be a little bit of relief and kind of just calling it out, and for then him to say, like, I can't remember what he says to her, like, well, I think you're all right,
you're not that bad,
or something like that. You're not that bad. Mm-hmm. But to, which is not really a great line, but to her, I mean, for someone who's already that vulnerable and probably has so much shame around her mental health, I guess, is just kind of like, whoa, this guy might be different.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much that she's starting to share, but and we get the sense of like, oh, there's an iceberg of stuff. She talks about potentially repressed sexual abuse from her childhood. And then right before the waiter shows up, when she says something happened on a Greyhound bus, and then the waiter shows up and I'm like, oh my God, what happened on a Greyhound bus to Sheila?
Yes. That and like, what did Lucy say to Jean? Those are my two big questions. Yeah.
Yeah. And so like, but there's a sense of like, oh, I'm really happy that there's like, they're both feeling a connection, and thank God they found each other. And then they leave the restaurant, and he tells her, oh, let's take a little detour, and, you know, has her eventually pull up and, you know, turn off the lights of the car. And she's sitting there and talking about, you know, it's just the last guy she went on a date with that he, you know, just ditched her at the restaurant. He pretended he went to the bathroom and then he just left. And she's just like relieved that like, and she says, even at the restaurant, I haven't had a boyfriend in 6 years. She's already saying boyfriend, you know? And then she, and the editing on this is genius. The editing in this scene is so good. Like her, mm-hmm. like finishing that and like starting, and as she's starting to turn and look at him, we hear the like fap, 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 fap kind of sound and his buckle mm-hmm. shaking and the realization that he's like looking at her and jerking off. And the face that she makes, the like realization face that she makes, I like put my hands on my cheeks like Kevin McAllister. I couldn't believe what I was watching.
I know. What also, and I'm sure you picked up on this too, but like he's masturbating because they're near a playground.
Well, and the way they reveal that is so yes. creepy, because she realizes what he's doing. And then she just like turns and like starts to cry and just sits there. And then he is into that, he's in that fantasy, you know, that headspace of like, you're not going to tell on me, are you? You know, if you tell on me, I'll get you. And then that's when the focus shifts and we realize that there's a playground across the street. And the look on his face is so creepy and pathetic and fully like brought to life of like what's going on for this guy right now. Like, I really admire Jackie Earle Haley for just fucking going for it. I mean, I don't know what he's like in real life, but he is Ronnie McGorvey to me, you know?
I know. It's like, I know that like Stanley Tucci got nominated for like The Lovely Bones, mm-hmm. but like Jackie Earle makes Stanley Tucci look like, you know, insert whatever. I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
Jennifer Connelly in A Beautiful Mind. There
we go. Thank you. It just is so sinister and uncomfortable and scary and just like gross at the end of the day. And she just like silently weeps and, you know, cut to like the tires screeching outside of the house to drop him off.
Right.
It's just like you feel there's a part of me, too. It's like that's the only way he's going to be able to. That's the closest he probably felt to like a release in a very long time.
Right.
Like, because I'm sure he like fantasizes in his own bedroom, but like to be near a playground out in public and using her for that, it makes it even more disturbing.
Right. And that's how it felt, was like, and it's that weird thing where like the storytelling is telling of it and the character that they've brought to life, I can recognize exactly what you're saying of like the relief on this guy's face. And I'm like, he probably has not felt exactly this relief in so long. And yet when you think about the recipe for his relief, it's just so awful. And it's so awful for him, because it's just what an awful way to experience life. It's all awful. It's awful for her as potentially someone who's been abused before. And it's just everything. You almost realize that the date was just him grooming her, you know, because that's all he knows, you know?
Yeah, I just feel also, and maybe this is our tie back to May McGorvey, his mother, played by Phyllis Somerville, too, with like how she knows. And even like in the conversation leading up to her saying like, you need to meet a nice girl or like someone your own age. Like he's like, mother, I feel like he's one of those guys who calls his mom mother, which is a very specific type of person. I can't remember how he categorized it too, but some like he's basically telling her like, I am attracted to kids, like it's not gonna work. And she doesn't really want to believe it, you know, because she loves him. And she also wants, you know, that whole conversation is sort of based in the fact that she's not going to be around forever and she wants someone to take care of him, but it's just not going to happen.
Yeah, and I think he actually calls her mommy, because he really, oh, that's
when
right.
she said, even worse.
Yeah. Oh. When she says, like, you know, I'm not going to be around forever. And then he, like, kneels at her feet and he's like, what's wrong, mommy? Are you sick? And she's like, I'm old, you know? And, but it is, and he is very much aware. I think he's like, yeah, I have, like, a psychosexual disorder or something. He knows that, like, it's not just about, you know, finding somebody, you know, to help satisfy any urges. And it's so it's just such a trap that he's in. And it's crazy how the movie, I mean, he compared to someone like Larry, it's like Ronnie, he's also like sort of a sympathetic character. And so like the scene at the pool when he's like, and you know that it's wrong and he shouldn't be in there.
God.
And he's under the water, like a shark looking at those. I was like, this is not good. I was one of those moms. Oh my God, there he is. Like that. But when the police show up and he's like, I was just trying to cool off. Like there's this part of me that's like, oh God, the prison this man lives in of his own mind, you know?
Yeah, I feel like I would have to move. And I know that it doesn't necessarily solve the problem of his urges, I guess, too. Cause like he could be like that in any part of the world, I guess, but he has his mother that's tying him to this town. But it's crazy that no one recognized him before he got in the water, because he just sticks out like a sore thumb.
Yeah.
Like he's already a creepy looking guy. And that scene is so unsettling in the pool. Like you're saying, I was just like gripping the chair as I was watching. I was like, oh my God, no one knows who he is.
Yeah.
And everyone just like gets out of the pool. The police come, and it's also a little silly the way everyone kind of goes back in the pool so quickly.
Right.
I thought that was like a weird choice. Like let's have a couple kids go in, not everyone in the whole, you know, pool of extras that they had.
Yeah, there were like there were shots of like mothers gleefully throwing their kids back in the pool. I was like, maybe let the water settle a little bit. I don't know.
yeah, who knows what he did.
Yeah, pool. Right. But indeed, the only person who really loves him is his mother, May. And I think Phyllis Somerville is phenomenal in this movie.
She's so good in this.
Yeah. She was in Mayor of Easttown. That was her last role.
I know. Yeah. She played Betty.
She played
yes.
Betty. But I remember her. I think the first time I ever saw her was in The Big C. She played Marlene.
Oh, nice.
But and she, again, she does this, like, you know, she passed away, I think, in 2021 or 2020. She did this kind of like craggy old lady role, just, you know, much like Jane Addams. It was like they got the perfect person to play this kind of character.
Yeah, I kind of loved it. Like, she was a mama bear. Granted, she was like knocking on death's door, and I couldn't really remember what happened to her. And, you know, eventually, and I do love the fake out of her, you know, washing spray paint off this front sidewalk that spells out evil. And she kind of like holds her heart. It's, you know, foreshadowing, right. I guess. But I thought that was when she passed. And eventually it's, you know, there's a showdown with Larry who comes. Oh, Larry made me so nervous. I just, oh, God, I was like, what's he going to do? I thought he was going to kill
Ronnie.
I lost everyone's name. Ronnie. Yeah. Like, I just, this guy had so much. I think that's why I loved him so much in this movie, is because you learn that he accidentally shot this kid at the mall when he was a cop. And there's so much just guilt, just, and his marriage is falling apart, and he's taking it out on Ronnie because it's the only thing that he can really have control of, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's another, it's another narrative similar to Brad, of like just this man who has just had an idea of who he was or who he was going to be, and then, you know, in his case, you know, it was shooting that kid at the mall, and then, you know, losing his job, and it just, things kind of falling apart, and then him clinging on to this, you know, concerned parents committee, because it was like, yeah, it was finally a way for him to feel powerful, to feel like the alpha, to feel like he was protecting his community. You know, he says that thing to Brad about, do you ever think about the term homeland security? And it was that reminder of like, oh God, like, you know my feelings on post 9/11 America. Just,
yeah.
But like, I think there's a real truth to like the context of that time and people like Larry who were activated by like, you know, we gotta protect our own, you know, and like needing to feel powerful. And I agree. I couldn't remember before, obviously, it all happened, whether Larry killed Ronnie or Ronnie killed Larry or whatever was going to happen. But I did appreciate that May held her own against Larry and was like, well, whatever my son did, you know, is not nearly as bad as what you did to that poor boy at the mall. And I love that she just like dug her nail into that. I was so team May.
Yeah, you got to fight fire with fire because it's her house at the end of the day. Like, granted, Ronnie lives there, but she's just protecting her child. And, you know, so many people have just probably given them so much shit over the years, too, that I would certainly fire back with that, too. It almost seemed like Larry and Marianne should have been a couple. In my mind, they were, because they're the two biggest assholes in this movie.
Same. I kept thinking, like, wait a minute. Are they together? Because that would make perfect sense.
Yes.
I think we should pretend they were, because that's what I would have expected. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, May, I also have to just think about like being the mom of the weird kid, you know, because Ronnie has, well before Ronnie's criminal behavior, I'm sure he was always an oddball. And like, you can just tell the characters that each of them playing, this is who they were since they were little children, you know, even Sheila, like in a way, like we're seeing exactly who she was when she was a little girl. And that's part of, I'm sure, what Ronnie was attracted to. And I feel like, I don't know, I just think about like when you're the parent of a kid like that, if May is obviously just trying to put her head in the, you know, in the ground a little bit and just trying to like, you know, think, no, no, you have a nice smile. Like you're, you know, you always eat what I put in front of you. You're very agreeable. Like she's just trying to find those good qualities and trying to ignore all of the mold. And I don't know. It's like, I imagine she's been doing that her whole life. And I guess to go with the theme of the movie, in what ways has May had to kind of swallow her own disappointments about having grandkids and a daughter-in-law and things like that, yeah. You know, and instead she's got a child predator who lives in her house.
Yeah. Cause then at the end of the day, you just want your kid to be able to play with the other kids and be normal. And she's just trying to push that to the extent of it, with him pushing back and saying, it's not going to work, Mom. You know, I'm like, I don't know how old he's supposed to be in this movie, but like, you know, let's say late 30s,
right?
Mid 30s, 40s, something like that. It's too late.
Yeah.
And you can't change them.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, and there's a lot of people I feel like that are, that not necessarily even with any of Ronnie's history or, you know, his disorders and whatnot. Just, I think there's a lot of people out there where it, I know people that like, I, you know, from, I don't know, family, friends and relatives and whatnot, and people I've met along the way where it's like, I don't know if it's ever going to change. I think this is just who you are. And I don't know if, I don't know if anyone's ever going to find you, you know, not that that's what it's all about, but I just don't think that's what's going to happen, you know?
Yeah. Which is tough because you feel like you have control over that. And simultaneously, it feels like it's a reflection of you if you don't. If your child doesn't fit in,
yeah,
in whatever way possible, if your child is different, that you can make him not different.
Right.
But you could tell that she does love him.
Absolutely.
I think throughout that, it's not disdain. I think she just genuinely wants him to be all right.
Right.
Which I think is hard to show, I guess, maybe even in this performance, which makes it even more interesting.
Yeah, yeah. She doesn't treat him like a criminal, you know.
Yeah.
But I also imagine there's just a lot that she does not want to see. But yeah, and so that's, you know, that's our, you know, Miss Phyllis. But we've talked about Jean, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Who have I missed? Oh, you know what I should mention while we're talking about Jackie Earl Haley, since he was Oscar nominated, perhaps we should mention who he did not win the Oscar against.
It was a tough year.
This was quite a year, and because he was up against Jaimin Hounsou for Blood Diamond, and Mark Wahlberg for The Departed, and Eddie Murphy for Dreamgirls, who everyone thought was the shoo-in, and then it was Alan Arkin for Little Miss Sunshine, which I feel like we're going to do at some point in the next few months.
Oh, yeah, that would be great.
I love that movie.
I would love it.
Yeah, I mean...
Same.
Ugh.
Another sort of early... Another movie I had on DVD.
That's right.
There's no Lucy in it, but, you know, we'll take
right,
it.
Right, right.
There's an Olive.
There's an Olive.
Which was almost Lucy's name.
See?
We almost named Lucy Olive, so yeah.
It's perfect. And that movie, it's great. It's, yeah, Alan Arkin, Steve Carell, obviously Queen Tony, Beth Grant shows up later at the pageant. Like,
Yeah.
I can't wait to do Little Miss Sunshine. I remember seeing that in the theater, and when the van, like the horn, wouldn't stop honking, that to me in like 2006, that was like the funniest thing I'd ever seen. And
of course, it's great.
And obviously that was the Dreamgirls year, so that was the year that Jennifer Hudson won Best Supporting Actress. But that was, you know, and obviously Little Miss Sunshine, Abigail Breslin was nominated, but that also was the year of Kate and Notes on a Scandal.
Oh my God.
And the two girls, the gals from Babel, which is another movie I feel like at some point we'll do.
Oh yes, Babel.
Yeah. We got to talk about Adriana Barraza in the desert, you know?
Oh my God, I'm so stressed just thinking about it. I'm like, give that woman some water.
Right. That's,
she needs some milk.
Somebody help her. That's the name of the episode, Adriana Barraza in the desert. I think that'll be,
yes.
I can't wait.
Oh God.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Have we talked about everybody? We didn't talk about Lucy, played by Sadie Goldstein. She was cute.
She's a cutie. Yeah. I mean, maybe we talk about this ending here because there's a lot packed into it. It feels like very much like a West Side Story, Tony trying to get to Maria. And there's so many, I shouldn't say so many roadblocks, but they both, like we mentioned before, they both slip out into the night. Brad does not take Aaron with him. And I found it interesting that Sarah took Lucy because it seemed like that was almost the deal when they were talking about it, because Brad wins the football game and it's like, and Sarah shows up and cheers him on and the like from the bleachers. And then so they make this pact. They're going to meet at the park, I guess, because I feel like Sarah got there first.
Mm-hmm.
And just like catastrophic things happen. I mean, more so for Sarah, I feel. But Brad along the way finally gets acknowledged by the young skateboard crew, and they just sort of push him into trying this like death-defying feat of skateboarding on top of like a handrail. And he just like, you don't see it, but he like ends up in the hospital. And then Sarah, this also terrified me too, because I couldn't remember the ending. She just randomly ends up in the park at night. And it's also when Ronnie is just like losing his mind because he reads the note that May left him. It said, "Be a good boy," I think, which is so devastating. And he just grabs a knife and heads for the hills and ends up in the same playground as Sarah.
Oh,
I think I set that up pretty
perfectly.
Well.
Yeah,
I'm passing the baton to you.
Yeah, so Ronnie's had the meltdown. He's destroyed all the clocks and all the figurines in the house.
Oh, yes.
And had that whole scene. I just kept thinking, how many takes was this? How many props do they have to buy? You know?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Larry is drunk.
Oh, yeah,
and
Larry.
He is, you know, out on the hunt. He needs to feel something. And so, like, yeah, Sarah's, you know, she's gone to the park with Lucy. Brad has finally been acknowledged by the young kids. Larry is off to, you know, hunt down Ronnie. And Ronnie is at the park, presumably with a knife. And so Sarah, you know, approaches him. He's sitting on the swing and crying. And she approaches him and says, you know, do you need any help? And he says, you know, yes, that she's gone now. And he gets, you know, he's hysterical about his mother dying. And then she turns and Sadie, that's the actress's name, Lucy's gone. And so then Kate starts, you know, Sarah starts, we're just going by actress names at this point. Sarah starts running around screaming, looking for Lucy, and eventually finds her just like staring up at the fireflies, you know, under a street light. And I don't know what that was. Part of me was like, it was like we were seeing adults acting like children and we were seeing a child act like a child, you know? And it was almost like Brad biting it on the skateboard and Sarah briefly losing Lucy. It's like they realized they had to be adults. They couldn't be kids. They had to be adults. She needed to take care of this kid. She needed to put this kid in the car seat, whether she wanted to be in it or not, because that was her job, you know? And
yes.
And when Brad is injured and they're putting him in the ambulance, he says, call my wife, because that's what you're supposed to do because you're an adult, you know? And it just snaps him out of it. And I love that. I thought that was it was a little abrupt.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they fully stuck the landing on this movie, but I loved like the thought of that. But obviously all of that gets slightly overshadowed by then Larry finding Ronnie in the park.
Oh,
to bring it to a West Side Story place, you know?
I know, really. It's like Chino and I don't even know. We really could map it all out.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I think when I first saw this, I didn't fully understand that Ronnie castrated himself, so to speak, on the swing. And I do love that Larry, you know, like you were saying before, he kind of gets the last moment of this movie and kind of gets to save Ronnie and something that he'd never got to do with that young kid that he shot. It's just like a redemption arc because you think that Larry's going to kill Ronnie.
Right.
He's going to go back to his house because he still has unfinished business. So to see, and just like Ronnie saying like, I'm going to be good now. I can be good now because he basically cut off his dick.
Yeah.
And that's really the only way that he is going to be better. is so sad and really just jarring to watch in the midst of Sarah being in the same space as him because she knows who he is. I was like, it was almost like a horror movie. I'm like, stop pushing Lucy, get her out of that swing and leave.
Yeah.
And I feel that that's what heightens everything because your child is missing and there's like a sexual predator like 10 to 15 feet away. It made me very uneasy. But going back to Larry, it's just I was happy to see that.
Yeah, I mean, I think to your point about Sarah with Lucy in the park, what that made me think of was like, Sarah, you need to grow up and take your child out of the park with the child predator. Stop waiting for your boyfriend. So I yes. totally agree. And then, yeah, you know, with the scene, then when it kind of all ends with Larry and Ronnie, here's my question. This is such a dumb question. Given the fact that we're both men, I should know this. When someone is castrated, in this case, have they cut their balls off or their dick off?
I think it's a great question. And I also don't really know because I can't even imagine the amount of pain that you must be in. But I feel like that would be a lot of blood.
I know.
A ton of blood.
Because isn't the idea of like the castrato, the little soprano boy singer?
Yeah,
They cut their balls off. So I think, I don't know. In any
Maybe
event,
it's the whole shebang.
Yeah. But it could have been all of it because there is so much fucking blood. And that shot of like Ronnie from behind with all the blood and when he stands, because we don't know until like we see the blood dripping from under him. Cause I thought he was going to stab Larry and I thought, oh,
yeah,
I see what's going to happen. And instead, you know, and it's funny because when I think about Todd Field's other movie In the Bedroom, I think about the confrontation between Tom Wilkinson's character and the guy who murdered his son in the woods. And there's just like, I thought we were going to have a similar like merciless moment here, but instead, yeah, it was like, everybody got an opportunity at redemption, even Ronnie in a way, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I think he honors his mother's dying wish. I think that there's, you're led to believe that he's snapped in a way that like he's going to seek revenge and kill Larry. But really, I think what there's so much, you know, part of that emotion is just like, if I'm going to be a good boy, this is what I'm going to have to do. And really kind of facing that, like going against everything that he feels is rights, those urges, I guess. And that's tough. That is,
yeah,
so dark. And I just want to go back to Sarah for a second too, because Sarah is a fucking shitty mom.
I know.
Like even when she's taking a shower and like Lucy's in the bedroom, like granted she was taking a nap, it's after Jean leaves, but like I don't know any mom, granted I don't know how, I mean, who knows, I can't speak for moms, but I would feel like I would have to have Lucy in the bathroom with me if I took a shower, because what is she, like 3?
Yeah.
Like she can't be older than that. A thousand things could happen, but I'm not a mom, and no judgment to any mom who, you know, has their kid play on the iPad while they, you know, take a shit.
Right, know? Whatever you got to do.
I don't know.
Yeah, no, I.
Yeah.
And there, I mean, I think with that scene then when Lucy's like, you know, I have something for you. And she's like, well, just leave it. And I think it makes that moment at the end when she's crying in her daughter's lap kind of all the richer of like realizing like when she apologizes, it's like realizing I have just been ignoring you. I've been using you. I have not been I was going to like take you away from your home and run away with this other man. Like, what am I, you know what I mean? Like all of like, what was I doing? It's really, I don't know. But I love that instead of Sarah being punished for any of that, really instead of any of them being punished, they're all given, which I think is the point of the movie at the end, they're all given an opportunity to like have a new future and that you can't change the past, but you can have a new chapter and that can start now. And like, I think that's where it all lands, you know?
Yeah. I need you also to find like a GIF of Kate Winslet and like the towel head wrap, just feeling her oats. Just like, look how gorgeous I am.
Yeah.
Cause it's such a great moment too, where she's just like, you're right. It's like, she doesn't give a shit that her daughter made her a homemade frame. She's like, look how hot I am in this mirror right now.
Like just feeling glowing from her. It reminds me of, you've seen the movie Unfaithful.
I don't think I have. Oh. Miss Diane Lane. Oh. I never have.
Oh, there's a great scene of her like remembering her hot sexual encounter with the affair she was having.
Ooh,
and it's,
yes,
it's similar, but it's like with cuts of her remembering. It's, oh, you need to see Unfaithful. It's, I can't believe you didn't buy that on DVD in the early 2000s.
I know.
Sorry.
I missed
it's
it.
It's so up your alley. It's ridiculous. You know, before we kind of, you know, get to the end of all this, you know, business, we have to talk about Miss Thomas Newman, whose score plays a very small role in this movie until the closing mm-hmm. credits. And I have to ask, did you watch the closing credits?
No, I don't even know if I can contribute to this conversation. I'm sorry. I think it took me so long to watch it today, and it was kind of a busy day. So the moment it ended, I was like, okay, great. And then I had to go do like three more things before we started to record. And now I regret all of my choices for the day.
Well, and I think actually I had assigned this to you at one point like weeks ago, and then I think we had like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, what's funny is the album version of the end title music and what plays in the movie was slightly different. Like, in the movie, like...
Okay.
It's the same thing, but in the movie, it's almost like the strings are a lot more, like, pronounced. That is... We're not even on the after show, and I'm telling you, your assignment is to sit through the entire end credits of Little Children because it is... stunning music. It is some of my, it is probably top five favorite. And I said last week was top five favorite child actresses. This week, top five music, top five pieces of music from a movie. The end title credits of Little Children.
Okay. Cause you know what? I do remember like 5 seconds of it because the words Little Children come up and it's like, it's a totally different tone from how the movie ends. It's just like this like flurry of woodwinds and strings yep. and stuff. I was like, that's a weird choice, and then I was like, gotta go, and I turned off the TV, and luckily it's free on Tubi for anyone out there who's looking to watch Little Children.
God, that's where I watched it. God bless Tubi.
Yeah,
minimal commercial breaks, and if there were, it was like yes. one ad, maybe two.
It's not bad. Yeah, I got to go. I got a snack during one of those breaks.
Yeah.
It was great.
I love Tubi. I just love that Tubi.
I just love her. Yeah.
Mm. Well, yeah, but indeed, the score, it does, plays a very minimal part of the rest of the movie, but man, that last 8 minutes over the credits is a work of art. So,
wonderful.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm excited.
To the extent that I think they're even playing us off. I think that end title credits might be playing us off as we speak.
How convenient.
Yeah.
Or inconvenient.
Yeah, I know. I like that. Well, little child, where can folks find more of you?
They can find me on my other podcast, The Good Vanilla, which is a Barefoot Contessa podcast, or you can follow me on Instagram at Nick Kuchanov. How about you?
Well, you can find me on my other podcast, All Right Mary, where we are coming down the home stretch of season 16 of RuPaul's Drag Race, and... you can find me on Instagram at ColinDrucker_. And of course, you can get more of both of us in a best supporting capacity on Instagram at BSAPod.
Or you can send us an email at thebsapod@gmail.com.
And keep those little peepers peeled, children. Ooh. Because
I like that.
Because that the good. Best supporting after show is coming just right around the corner. And we got a lot to catch up on. We talk on about what we've been watching, what we've been doing, what we've been eating. We've got best supporting assignments. We've got BSAs of the week. You get all of that. You get a whole extra episode. You get early access to this episode. All of it's $5 a month. And all of it is at patreon.com/BSAPod.
Ugh, what a steal.
Yeah. 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 These prices.
These prices. It's more than worth
it
the price.
It is, absolutely. Well, speaking of making a trip for a cheap curtain, I think it's time for you and a guy, the guy being me, I think it's time for you and I to get into two pre-owned leased Toyota Tercels named Ruth and Cheryl and get the hell out of Stepford.
Sounds good. You're going to ram me with your rammer.
Yeah.
I'm running.
And that, as they say,
is that.